This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Well, thanks for joining us. It is hour number three, SB Nation AM, rolling along NBA playoffs with the Rockets losing to Golden State last night. The officiating becoming the storyline. Hate to see that because of these two teams. It was supposed to be a Western Conference Finals, and because of seeding, it wasn't going to work out that way. But this was the series. Many of us were just kind of looking at this from the outside, you know, not really committed to one team or another, just really wanted to enjoy for entertainment's sake. And I still hope we do that. And I still hope we get that. But it just is too bad that last night, for yesterday afternoon, I should say, that game was marred by officiating. And some of the calls either went against the Rockets or went for Golden State. I don't know how the league fixes this. I don't know how the league would correct this. But if that becomes the storyline, this could be a really good series. But if that's the storyline, it's going to take it away. The Denver Nuggets beat San Antonio in a seven-game series in round number one. They'll get Damian Lillard in Portland tonight in the first game of that series. Now, it's funny because the Nuggets remind me of a team that they're getting told, people are telling everybody how special the Nuggets are, right? Everybody is trying to, who like this Nuggets team, likes the way they built, are doing so much convincing to others that are not convinced of the Nuggets basketball strength in terms of getting to a conference finals or maybe to an NBA finals. And I always say, like, if you have to do that, if you have to constantly remind people how good you are, then you're not that good. And the Nuggets are a really good basketball team, but they take some convincing when you want to put them on the same level as the Rockets or Golden State. And we'll see about Portland for that matter. Look, beating a 7 seed is supposed to come easy for a 2. This was anything but. Now, I know San Antonio is a different 7 seed, right? Greg Popovich is got a team that, you know, just a couple of wins and losses away from moving up and down that bottom part of the standings. But the way Denver beat this San Antonio team in 7 games, they had good moments, great moments. There were times where they looked like a really good 2 seed. And then there were times where they didn't. They didn't look like it at all. And I'm interested to see what Portland, who's now really figured out a way they're playing in this playoffs without Nurkic, is going to be able to do against this Nuggets team in game one tonight.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, and that's Ron with two N's. Ron, did you like the Chargers draft? Did they get good grades from the people that do that kind of thing?
They got good grades from me.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I'm kind of excited about what they did.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the fun things they did, I mean, you know, we were talking earlier about how the Cleveland Browns are Tigers North.
And right.
If we go off that line, the Chargers defense is becoming Irish West.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Notre Dame. Yeah. So,
yeah, they picked up 2 players from Notre Dame and paired them up with a guy who was already there from Notre Dame.
They picked up a guy from Delaware in round 2. Now, What I found interesting was, listen, it takes a lot of detailed work to know all the details of a free safety from Delaware. And they were all over this. Oh, this is a great pick for the Chargers. This guy can play. This guy's good. That's when you really do your homework, when you can say somebody from Delaware is going to be an impact player for your team.
Yeah,
that was pretty sweet.
You wouldn't really bat an eye, say, if they picked up a defensive back from San Diego State or USD or even like Cal San Luis Obispo.
Yeah.
You know, small schools, but they're in their area. And we never fault teams for doing that. You know, picking up anybody from, you know, a smaller school, but it's relatively close to where, you know, their home base is. I mean, Delaware, God, I don't even know if Maryland, the Baltimore would pick up anybody from Delaware.
The Blue Hens. Yeah. Joe Flacco went to Delaware, didn't he? Joe Flacco, Delaware?
Probably. He seems like a Delaware
State. I think it was either Delaware or Delaware State. I think he went to Delaware. The Raiders, they took Hunter Renfrow with the fifth round pick. Do you remember Hunter Renfrow?
Was he was the guy disappointed.
Yeah, he was the kid at Clemson that caught the winning touchdown against the Tide the first time they beat them.
Yeah.
Remember that he was off the pick? Remember the famous pick that was in the end zone that Deshaun Watson found? In the kick, they went a little Clemson in this draft. I like that.
No, but I was a little upset that because I thought for sure Hunter Renfrow was going to the Patriots.
Oh yeah, sure. Why not? Right? Yeah.
I mean,
true.
He had Patriot written all over him.
I'm really excited to see where Jarrett Stidham is going to end up as a quarterback in this league as a backup and then a non-competitive role when he's discarded by the Patriots for some draft pick 3 years ago, 3 years from now when Brady doesn't show any sign of retiring. Jarrett Stidham is not a bad quarterback, and he went to the Patriots. Well, he'll surely die a career death.
He's actually
not the quarterback of the future.
No, he won't die a career death. He'll get in a few games here and there, and then be he'll get more draft picks or in a trade than Josh Rosen. I mean, if you think about all the quarterbacks that have came through.
Name me a quarterback that has backed up Tom Brady that has gone on to have success.
Oh, I'm not saying he's going to go on and have success.
Name me one.
But he will get paid well.
Yeah, that's very true.
I'm not saying
that's what
he's
I mean,
success.
Though. Where's Jacoby Brissett?
Brisket.
I have no idea.
Brisket, he's grilling away.
Ryan Mallett, no idea.
Or I think he's out of the league.
Who is the other guy? Brian Hoyer. Where'd he go?
Is he still with the Browns?
I don't know. There was one time he had a little bit of success. Everyone was excited. Jimmy Garoppolo is the only one that I'm still holding out hope for. Yeah, got my fingers crossed for you, Jimmy.
Matt Castle got a big deal.
Matt Castle got a really big deal and then ended up, didn't he play in Buffalo recently?
A couple years ago?
I have no idea. But I know he's not playing for Kansas City. And Jimmy, if you stay healthy, good luck to you. I got my fingers crossed that you'll be able to break out of that.
Now, how about this? You were bringing up earlier about the guy, the Chargers selected from Delaware. What about Easton Stick. He's the quarterback the Chargers selected in the fifth round.
Where's he from?
North Dakota State.
Oh, okay. All right.
He is 54-5.
Now, wait. North Dakota State's one of the good FCS schools, right?
Yeah. What,
like national championship good, right?
I think so.
Whatever it's called. It used to be 1AA back when it was much easier to sort all this stuff out.
Yeah, what did you say? FBS?
Well, there's FBS, which
is the
bowls, and the FCS is the teams that we do not have going to bowls.
Yeah, but as the Easton Stick, that could be the guy who replaces Rivers.
That is pretty cool.
Easton Stick.
What a cool name.
From
Easton
Rivers,
Stick.
From Rivers to Stick.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good last name. I kind of like that.
Yeah, but we'll see. I mean, the truth is I hate when people do all the winners and losers. These guys had a great draft. These guys had a bad draft because you don't know.
You have no idea.
You have no idea.
And by the way, that changes. When I was covering the Broncos, I can't remember what year, but we had one year where it looked like, oh, this is not going to work. And then 3 years later, we're like, oh, wait a minute, that did work. Some of these guys actually did play really well. This is really cool. And it does change from, it also can change from you start off like, oh, these guys like in year one, like these guys are making an impact. This is turning out great. And then by year three, you're like, boy, only one is still on the team because of a variety of situations. So it fluctuates. You never know. But, listen. If you make a living doing this, like there's only a couple of things you can do, right? With draft analysis, you spend 11 months of research. You probably do 8 months of nothing where you do research. Maybe you write a column or two about some kid who's doing really well or whatever, but you do research. Then you do a whole thing of mock drafts and explanations. Then you put out your big draft guide, and then you do your grades. And then you do that, and then that's it. And then you start studying again.
All right. I'm going to quiz you real quick.
Okay. I'm going to fail, by the way.
Yeah, you won't fail.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not one of those quiz, those type quizzes. Because, you know, we always, like I was just saying, we always try to figure out who won and who lost in a draft, right?
Right.
All right, so if we go, I'm using the bar that it takes a good 5 years for some of these players to turn out who we hope they would be.
Okay.
So I'm looking at the 2014 draft. All right. The number one pick that year was Jadeveon Clowney with the Texans.
Yep.
So that's a good pick for him, right?
That worked.
But if we go down the list, Jacksonville took Blake Bortles. Buffalo took Sammy Watkins. Number two on the pick, on the number two overall, was an offensive tackle named by the name of Greg Robinson.
Okay.
Selected by the Rams. Now, right. we could say that the Rams had a, that was a terrible pick, and that maybe the Rams failed in the draft because that was their number two overall. But number 13 overall was Aaron Donald.
Ah, see, there you go. That's right.
So they did decent. You know,
I got,
you have,
okay, yeah.
So you see what I'm saying? I mean, it's like we can judge these teams now, but you know, it probably takes a good 5 years. The Raiders, I mean, they selected well. I don't know why they ever got rid of Khalil Mack, though. This was the draft that Khalil Mack came out in.
Do you get good grades for a draft if your player made it after he left the team in free agency and became better, like as the years go on? Do you say, well, they had the right idea. He ended up being a star. He just wasn't a star for them. Does that work?
I don't know.
Oh, no, you should have known what you had and kept him. And kept him around. So, you're right. There's such an inexact science to all this.
Yeah,
this is the weird thing about the draft. And you want impact players almost like the second they come out.
Yes.
Right? And it used to be like you'd grow, you take it, you know, guys would grow into the job, right? And then not anymore. Now it's like, no, we need you to do something now.
You need to
Forget this. We need to be rolling now. If you ain't rolling now, we don't know what we're going to do with you.
God, Cleveland had a terrible draft. that year. Their first pick with the number 8 overall was Justin Gilbert.
Oh.
Who I don't even think is in the league anymore.
I don't think he's in the league anymore is right.
That second pick of theirs, which was number 22 overall in the first round, was your favorite quarterback, Johnny Football Manziel.
Did the money sign when he walked out on stage. I remember that.
I mean, and then from there on out, they had one Pro Bowler who I don't even know if he's still playing, Joel Bitonio.
No, I don't think he is.
He's an offensive tackle.
He might be.
They had nothing.
He might be. I don't know. Yeah, that's it. That's why John Dorsey is such a big coup, because he knows how to do this. He's really good. The Browns are going to be good. We're going to have to deal with it.
I'm so excited. What I'm jealous of is, you know,
about time.
What I'm jealous of are those people who are already Browns fans.
Who were already on the train?
Who were Browns fans and suffered?
Yeah. Oh, all those years?
For all those years.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm jealous of them because, you know, fortunately for me, I mean, the Chargers have suffered, but they've had decent years recently. You know, since Phillip Rivers has been, I mean, even going back with Drew Brees, when Drew Brees was quarterback, they were doing great things, and Phillip Rivers comes along. You know, they've had, you know, the past couple of seasons, maybe it's been more of an up and down, but they've been right there. So I haven't really had that losing sense with them for a long time. Same with you, the Steelers. I mean, you haven't had a losing season in what? How long?
Yeah. In a while, long time. Yeah.
And I mean, you've had the pleasure.
I consider it not making the playoffs a losing season if they had a winning record. But nevertheless, right.
But that's what I'm. The point I'm getting at is you consider not making the playoffs a losing season for you,
right?
You know, for the Browns, a winning season was winning two games.
Yeah, right? I know.
Or just getting a win. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, for a two-year stretch, they won one game.
We're building something here. It's popping. It's popping.
So, yeah, I am. I'll be the first to admit, I am jealous of Brown fan out there.
They really did a good job.
I would love to be in their shoes and just feel that excitement about going into the season. Like, God, you know, that long nightmare, that long embarrassing nightmare of never winning anything is finally over.
And they look so good. Like, they've got a team. This is the one thing about the Browns is that they've got a team where so many people are just excited to be a part of it, right? I mean, just excited to be a part of it. And I think that's really important, too, because, you know, you can go to New England and win titles and whatnot. But, man, if you win something in Cleveland, that's going to be epic. That's going to be so amazing part of your career. If you bring something to Cleveland that they didn't, that they not only thought they'd never get, but they were so far from getting just 30, maybe what, 24 months ago, maybe more than that, like maybe less than that, 13, 14 months ago. I mean, that's incredible. And that's the feeling. When they got Greedy Williams, I was so blown away that he fell that far and that Cleveland just went, oh, sure, why not?
And you were proud of him.
Right. I was like, well done.
That was, and that's the weird thing. I mean, that's why I'm you know, feeling the Browns are America's team this year, because we were proud of the fact that Greedy Williams fell to him. We were amazed, but we're proud of the Browns of what all the things they're doing, and we're hoping. I mean, if they won the Super Bowl, that means that my team didn't. And
yeah.
I'm fine with that. I don't know why that should be.
We love these stories, though. We like these stories where you remember. You have to go back. You have to be kind of old enough to remember. But the Atlanta Braves were like that. The Braves in the 80s were a very, very bad baseball team. Really bad baseball team. And then they went from worst to first. And they were playing in, I think, the Blue Jays in the first World Series. Maybe it was the Twins in their first World Series. And everybody was catching Braves fever because we liked those kind of stories. The team was terrible. The fans weren't showing up. And then they started winning and won. All right. 800-777-2907 on Twitter at Tony D. Radio, also at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's, as we continue our NFL conversation for the weekend on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Nick Sherrar is going to join us, our very own Nick Sherrar. We're going to talk Rockets with him. We're going to get to the NBA playoffs and get to this whole concept of officials and their role in this series. Yeah, they got a call. Stuff, but my God, yes, it was so frustrating watching yesterday. Doing a repair that needs a special tool, O'Reilly Auto Parts makes it easy with their loaner tool program. Over 80 specialized loaner tools are available, and they're sure to have a tool in stock to help you get the job done. Purchase the needed parts, put down a deposit on the loaner tool, return the tool in the original condition, receive a full refund. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. I had to bring this up. I was afraid I wasn't going to bring this up the rest of the week because we'll just get to be old news and I'll forget about it. Sebastian Janikowski announced his retirement. Did you see that? Let's give it up for Seabass calling it quits after 19 years. Is there any more colorful kicker in the league than Sebastian Janikowski from being a first round selection?
I'm going to say this. At one point, the Raiders had the two most colorful kickers in the league in Sebastian Janikowski, and I'm already forgetting the punter's name. Marcus something or.
Oh, yeah.
Marquise. Marquise Lee?
No. Oh, yeah. What was his name? Oh, my God. He ran his mouth against a Denver host.
But that's why I'm saying they had the two most colorful kickers. Now, one of them, you know, did it with his leg. The other one did it with his mouth.
Right. Janikowski was fantastic.
Yes,
he was built like a linebacker, and he could kick a football. I mean, he was beefy, bulky, and he could hit that ball. He could kick that ball a mile. He tied the then NFL record of 63 yards back in a Monday night game back in 2011. If I'm not mistaken, and I have to look this up, so please don't hold me to this. I believe he kicked a 65-yard field goal against the Broncos in a preseason game that I was at. Of course, doesn't count in the record books. But I believe he did this, and it's one of those, maybe he didn't, and it becomes an urban legend to me, but I swear he kicked a 65-yarder in a preseason game, because I remember saying, oh, this isn't going to count anyway. He could kick that ball a mile. First-round draft choice, played 18 years with the Raiders, and played at Florida State, too, was a Florida State kicker. But what a career. I mean, seriously. Sebastian Janikowski, man, he was a time where he was pretty automatic for a while.
It was. I'm looking over. He has a couple of NFL records. You know, longest field goal in overtime, which is 57 yards. You know, most extra points in a Pro Bowl, which is 8. Most field goals of 50-plus yards in one game, 3, tied with Justin Tucker. But the one that sticks out to me the most, longest field goal attempt, which is unofficial. But and I once I read that, I was like, I totally remember this. It was 76 yards.
Okay, give me the memory. Was this when was this when Gruden was the coach?
I think
the first time.
Well, it was in 2008.
Okay, no, it wasn't.
But it was just one of those things. Like I think they just threw him out there.
Yeah,
just because.
Just kick it. See if you can do it.
Yeah, the wind was blowing pretty heavy to his back, and they were like, "Yeah, you know what? Get out
there."
I think he came close too. If I'm not mistaken.
Can you imagine? I mean, just I said this. I say this all the time, and I use this for different examples. I think when you send a kicker out to kick a long field goal, like near the end of a first half or a game, and he's not expected to make it, and all they have to do is kick it as hard as they can, I think a lot of them just they come close, like they because. I can't imagine. I think there's still a rhythm you have to do it, but I think in Janikowski's case, he probably was like, with the win, I'll just see what happens. Let's kick this as hard as I can. 76 yards. Do you think anybody could make a 76? You're a kicker.
Eventually.
Is that too far for the human body?
No, it's not too far for the human body. I think.
Wait, but you say that casually, but
I do say that casually.
There are things that limit, like we're just not, you can't do. Like you can't run a 3-minute mile.
Yeah,
I know we thought
true.
4-minute mile, but
I really 76 yards is not. I mean, if you think about this, look at when they're doing kickoffs, right?
Right.
Now, granted, they're allowed to run up a little bit more, and there isn't the pressure of I need to aim it perfectly right here. But if you can get past that, because what they're kicking from the 35 yard line, how many times have you seen it go through the uprights?
Yeah, that's true.
So it's not out of the realm of possibility. You just need to have someone with the stones to sit there and be able to take care of it. And it's the fact of, you know, you don't have the
luxury.
Yeah,
but don't you need that running? I mean, running start?
You don't really need it. I'm sure Janikowski, I'm sure some of these guys, like Janikowski or Justin Tucker or any of these guys, they'll probably practice 70-yarders just because.
Oh, sure.
And I bet you some of them have made it. Now, whether or not it's attempted in a game, and I think a lot of that will always depend on the coach, whether the coach is willing to give up that field position.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you'd ever see it in regulation. I think you'd see it at the end of the half.
Right.
Like, we got 1 second left. Just send them out there and
see what happens. Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think that's the only way it's going to happen until, you
the
know.
The only way it's going to happen.
But, I mean, I'm sure there was a time when, you know, when guys were kicking it with their toe, the idea of, like, kicking a 50-yarder was foreign. Like, there's no one's ever going to be able to kick a 50-yard field goal.
He was an 80% field goal kicker, which is pretty good.
Yeah,
in the league for field goals.
I mean, he justified being what was he drafted? Was it 17 overall? 20? Yeah, 17 overall.
Do we put kickers in the Hall of Fame? I don't know if we. I think we do, but I don't know.
Yeah, he'll be in the Hall of Fame.
All right,
without a doubt.
So, well, do you know those Hall of Fame voters, man? They don't like kickers.
Well, it won't be. It won't
took
be
forever.
First ballot.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's going to take forever to get him
and
in
if he
They
is,
don't like kickers and punters. It took Ray Guy forever to get into the Hall of Fame. Ray Guy has an award named after him, and he wasn't. It took him a while to get in.
And doesn't Morton Anderson have the most points in NFL
yeah,
history?
Yeah, exactly.
Took
they don't like
forever.
Kickers and punters. But he's kind of interesting. He's a first-round pick. He lived up to the hype. Yeah, he was so...
Can't believe he chose a kicker in the first round.
Kind of kidding.
Al Davis.
What an amazing
I love that guy. I wish
it's
Al
incredible.
Davis was still here.
Pick the kicker in the first round. It's hilarious.
I mean, only the owner can pull that off.
Can you imagine?
If a GM did that, he would be fired on the spot.
Oh, you got to be kidding. That must have, I mean, as Raiders fans must have been like, oh, what?
Yeah.
He's like, he can kick field goals. Yeah, but you can get one off the street. Oh, my God.
I mean, you think about this, like, you they always scoff when they see an offensive lineman chosen.
Yeah.
I wish I could see the video of Raider fan when it was announced the kicker was taken.
Not only that, he was the 17th pick in the first round. He was the middle pick in the first round. You could have taken someone with unbelievable offensive or defensive skills, and you went kicker. That's amazing. We're going to talk Rockets and Warriors next.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
We're working on Nick Schirra, our very own Nick Schirra, from not only SB Nation Radio, but ESPN 97.5 in Houston. He goes to every Rockets game, I think, under the sun. Don't you pretty much live there beside your house, Nick?
I try to go to all the home games. It'd be nice for me to be able to travel to go to some of the road games. But, yeah, I usually catch every Houston Rockets game for sure.
All right, so this game one, and the fact that the referees are playing an impact already in this series, and I know I've set it up that, listen, the Rockets, when they shoot threes, they like to get a little bit extra on those three-point shots. Give me the philosophy of that and how you saw the officiating in game one.
Well, their philosophy never really changes. They always try to go for the three-point shot. They're pretty consistent about it. They're not necessarily a team that makes adjustments. And when the officials are calling the game in a particular way, it's not in their nature to kind of make the adjustment. The rule says if a defender imposes your landing area, you're supposed to call the foul. For whatever reason, the NBA officials of that particular game, that just wasn't the nature of the game. They just weren't calling the game like that. They admitted to Mike D'Antoni that they missed four different calls, which is 12 different free throw shots, as Mike D'Antoni said in the post-game presser, but they have to move on from that. And the way they move on from that is they don't make any adjustments. They continue to shoot the ball the way they do. So, yeah, the calls weren't made, but that was the nature of the game. The Rockets continue to play their game, and they did not make the shots at the end of the day, because I believe if they were making those shots, Tony, then maybe this wouldn't have been this big of a topic of discussion.
I was just going to get to that next, is that how much of that slow start out of the gate really led to more maybe frustration. Not saying that it's overblown. I think that the Rockets didn't make a good case that some of these calls should have been made, but how much of their inability early in this game or some of the struggles that they had shooting the three in this game really led to what they were saying afterwards?
I think it had a lot to do with it, because they're a team that knows how to get to the free throw line. And when they're not getting to the free throw line and they're not hitting their shots and they're playing the Golden State Warriors, which they're running back, you know, which they obviously have a rivalry against, it's going to be really frustrating. It's going to be extremely frustrating. So, you know, if this was a regular season game, maybe they wouldn't be as upset. But when you consider all the circumstances, the fact that they're playing against the defending champions, this is game one. They had an opportunity to still game one on the road, had some of these calls, you know, maybe had some of these calls went their way. And yeah, I can see that totally adding to the frustration, especially a guy like James Harden, Tony, who always makes his way to the free throw line. That has to be super frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I've always looked at teams, whenever you have a team that makes that has a disappointing finish in the postseason, whether it's losing a Super Bowl or a championship game in any sport, a lot of times that team will go through the motions during early training camp, go through the motions of the season, because in the end, what they want to do is they just want to get back to where they just left off as quickly as they can. How much of that was in the Rockets early this season when they were struggling, finding their rhythm, the loss of a few players, especially defensively, trying to find out who they were? How much of that was at play, or were the Rockets really struggling finding out who they were with some additional and some subtracted parts?
I think they were definitely trying to find themselves in the first half because of the Carmelo Anthony project and how that just did not work. Daryl Morey kind of owned up to it. They were definitely finding themselves in the first half. But the second half of the season, they kind of made all the adjustments. They got the depth that they needed, that they lost when they made the move for Carmelo Anthony. They added additions like Fareed. Some additions didn't pan out, like Shumpert. But for the most part, they know what this team is. Their identity didn't necessarily change. It was just finding themselves with the new roster that they had. I just think it put a speed bump in the first half of the season, but I don't think that's necessarily an excuse that Rockets could use. I don't think it really played a factor too much in this particular game. They were definitely trying to find themselves, but it wasn't necessarily a reason for them to have struggles going into the postseason.
How do the Rockets, and again, this is a team with superstars in James Harden and Chris Paul, but they really match up well with Golden State. What is it about these two teams in this particular series? What works right for Houston that other teams can't find?
Well, the James Harden-Steph Curry has always been kind of viewed as a favorable matchup. James Harden kind of has his way more when they find a way to get Curry to defend him, especially on the perimeter. Klay Thompson, for whatever reason, at least from a statistical standpoint, does a lot better for James. Does a lot better defending James Harden. What the Rockets can do well is make the matchups that they know might work. They know how to set the pick and roll. They know how to put their players in the right spot to make sure they get those favorable matchups. But it works the other way too. I mean, Steph Curry, if you know, when they got Nene on the floor, they can be vulnerable to the pick and roll, because the next thing you know, you got Nene defending a guy like Curry on the perimeter, and he's just too elusive. Now, they did a pretty good job of it, but for the most part, it works both ways. But a James Harden-Steph Curry matchup, that's certainly favorable for the Houston Rockets, at least from a statistical standpoint. And the Rockets know. They've done their homework. They know which matchups they like. It's really more of a challenge of them getting those matchups more than anything else.
Nick, is this a good team in terms of the Rockets? Are they a good team on the offensive side of the rebounding? Because if you're shooting 47 three-pointers, you're going to get some long out rebounds. Are they good at being able to get second chances off the missed threes?
They're good about getting offensive rebounds, but they're not necessarily always capitalizing off of it. You know, sometimes they can force the turnover, not really they can force the turnover like they did in the first quarter. They got 10 points off of 8 turnovers in the first quarter. And they still were losing in that first quarter. So offensive boards is huge. When you got Clint Capela on the floor, he does a fantastic job of that. But you're not necessarily going to get that same offensive rebounding presence all the time with Nene. Fareed didn't get the minutes early on. It was Nene. So that kind of hurt their offensive boards, because Fareed actually does well with rebounding. I think he does a little bit better than Nene, but Nene got the minutes early because of the experience. D'Antoni just decided to go with that rotation. But offensive boards would be huge against this team, because they turn the ball over, and even if they turn the ball over a lot and the Rockets capitalize with points, it still doesn't mean they're going to be scoring more points in that particular quarter. So offensive rebounding is huge. As long as you got Clint Capela and I think Fareed on the floor, I think they do a decent job of that.
Nick Sherrard joins us from ESPN 97.5 in Houston, covers the Rockets, among other things. When James Harden was going on that tear, just over 30 and 32 straight games, what was covering those games like? What was watching him do this like? I mean, it's not like they won 30 out of 32. There were times where he would have 38, 39, and they would lose, but how important was that keeping this team afloat during the season?
It was really important because the morale of the locker room was always really good the previous season, and then when they make one change, and there were rumors that some of the players were, there's one or two players that may have not been happy with the move, but for the most part they were okay with it. But the losing factor just affects the morale of the team. So if James Harden didn't do that, they would be a much worse team record-wise than they are now, they ended up the season. So it was so important for him to do that, because they would not have the record that they have now. And most people believe it's more about him trying to get the MVP and stuff like that. Look, I don't doubt the fact that the Houston Rockets would absolutely love James Harden to get the MVP, and they've definitely promoted that for sure. But at the end of the day, if he didn't do that, you would see probably a lower seed Houston Rockets team, and you might be playing against a team that you would not like to see in the first round, as opposed to a more favorable matchup like the Utah Jazz, that they were basically, for the most part, it was an easy matchup for the most part for them to get past.
There's an old saying that the series doesn't start until the home team loses, but how important is it to get a split? Do the Rockets really, really need a split getting out of Oakland?
I think so. I just think the star power that Golden State has is just too tough to deal with for them not to be able to steal one on the road. Now, I don't think it's impossible for them to win the series, but, I mean, my official pick is the Golden State Warriors, but I think it's really, really important for them to get one on the road. Now, if it's not necessarily games, if they can just get at least one of them, I think that would be a confidence booster. It can totally turn the series around. I think game two would be huge.
Yeah. Nick, really good stuff tonight. Really good stuff, and I really appreciate it. And I hope to get you on again as the series maybe progresses or if the Rockets even advance.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You got it. Nick Sciarra, by the way, who's really good, and I mean this, and I give him all the credit in the world because I've talked to him. I've had him on for many, many years. He's really good at MMA stuff. He really knows that sport really well. Really, really well. And so I've always liked having him on for that. But he covers the Rockets. And last night, again, yesterday afternoon, I should say. I always see last night in afternoon games. I don't know why. But yesterday afternoon, that game, it just was so marred by officiating that it really took something out of what this rivalry is and what this game is. And again, it's a tough slope. I don't want a game where the officials just let them play. I don't want that. I said it during the NCAA tournament too, right? We hear this all the time when they say, "Ah, man, the officials are just letting them play." No, because I want the officials to call things that are fouls and call things the right way. I don't necessarily want them to be a factor, and I don't want a presence, but I also don't want them to be absent. This game last night, yesterday afternoon, you could tell was being affected in a negative way by the officiating, and it was bothering Houston. And I think D'Antoni's got to be able to fix that and shore that up with his own team, because I don't know if it's going to go away. But D'Antoni is at least doing the smart thing as a head coach, which is make your case so public that it almost forces a rethought as to how the games are being officiated. Look, these officials know these teams. All right. They know what they do. They know Harden likes to get a little extra on the 3-point. That's what he does. All right. He jumps up, takes the shot. He also likes to lean in. He'll flop a little bit. He sells it. He always sells contact. As an official, you know that he's selling contact. So not everything is contact, but it also doesn't mean everything is not contact. So you have to make sure you're calling what you see and make sure you're being consistent on that. Jeff Van Gundy felt the officials were being consistent, but at least D'Antoni is trying to get into their head saying, "I'm not liking this. We're not liking this. You're not abiding by the rule and the intent of the rule." And I used earlier a strike zone mentality with home plate umpires, right? It shouldn't be that way with NBA officials. It shouldn't be, some officials call it, but I like it when, no, a foul is a foul. If you are impeding the jump in any way, or you're impeding the zone that the jumper is in, the shooter is in, that's a foul. If you make contact, that's a foul. And Harden is a master at drawing that. But not getting them and not getting to the line. And the other thing about this Rockets team, they are not afraid to shoot a ton of threes. A ton. They shot 47 of them. Right? 47 of them. Remember, there was one game against the Jazz during the season where they had, I think, more three-point field goals than two-point field goals in the game. Right? So they're not afraid to do that. But the reason that they're not afraid to do that is because they also get to the line that way at times. And they're masters at it. And we'll see how it goes in game two. I'll be curious to see what they call or not call in game two. All right, it's SB Nation Radio. It's SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, glad you could be with us on SB Nation AM. You know, Ron, the way the Celtics looked in game one against Milwaukee, that whole hold all four titles in one season, is making me a little nervous.
No.
I know. I'm not trying to.
We can't allow Boston to have this.
I think the Bruins and the Columbus Blue Jackets are evened up at one, so there might be some hope of getting
rid
of them.
Well, you know the Bruins are going to win that one. What business does Columbus even have being there? I saw an ad the other day, or something the other day. They literally, like a newspaper article explaining what hockey was to Columbus.
That's great. Now that you're jumping on the bandwagon.
Exactly. That's how it was phrased.
Yeah. It's like riding a ride at Disneyland or like Disney World. Welcome to the Columbus Blue Jackets bandwagon. In a few moments, you'll be entering our arena, where you'll be sitting down to explore all the wondrous worlds of hockey as we continue through the Stanley Cup playoffs. Please, no flash photography. Yeah, totally. And fans are going, okay, I'll sit down and watch this. This is a blue line. This is the red line. That's a goalie. You'll be hearing a lot more of those terms and more as you continue along the bandwagon of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Welcome aboard. Jeez.
Yeah, it's like, God. You may wonder why everyone stops skating when the puck sails across exactly. The other goal. That's called icing. Don't worry. No one really understands that call.
If you're confused, don't worry. So is everybody else in the arena.
But, I mean, come on. Can Stop. Boston really just hold all four titles at one time?
Ugh,
are we as Americans going to allow this? Can we write
it? I had a friend of mine who posted on Facebook, and I think I told you this Friday. He wrote, I'm sitting here watching the draft and then realized I'm a Patriots fan. I don't care. That's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. And now they're sitting around with the Boston Bruins and the Boston Celtics continuing in the second round of the playoffs. Good city.